Hello, welcome to My Camino, the podcast. I'm Dan Mullins. It's great to have your company.
It's very fulfilling. And as a teacher, you know, it doesn't get any better in a way than seeing the kinds of growth and development that we see in the students on this trip.
That voice you just heard is Douglas Challenger. We'll get to Doug and his wife, Laurie, in just a moment. But first, this is a podcast about the Camino de Santiago, or the Way of St. James. James was one of Christ's apostles, and he's often known as James the Stronger. There are even suggestions he was Christ's cousin. James left the Holy Land after Jesus' death and travelled to Spain to preach Christianity. He returned to Judea in around 44 AD, so 11 years later, and was beheaded by King Herod. James was the very first martyr. His remains were spirited out of the Holy Land, taken to Spain in a stone boat, and buried in a field in Galicia in northwest Spain. They were discovered in the 9th century, and the locals built a shrine to house them. Today, there stands a majestic cathedral in his name, Santiago de Compostela, or St. James under a field of stars. The cathedral and St. James's remains are the end point for the majority of pilgrims who walk El Camino, or the Way of St. James. Pilgrims from all over the world gather in his name to walk together, a journey of discovery. If nothing else, it's the chance to wander from town to town, discovering the cultural and historical unwinding of time in the majestic Spanish countryside. You can also walk Caminos in France or Portugal, Germany. Indeed, most European countries will invite you to take a pilgrimage. There are over 80,000 kilometres or 50,000 miles of Caminos across the continent. So, this is a podcast about a handful of those pilgrims, their intention, their blessing. And so many different people walk, and so many different types of people walk. Shy people, loud people, musicians, actors, doctors, priests, mothers, fathers, sons and daughters. You won't be judged on the Camino. You are simply there as a pilgrim on your journey. And you can share that journey if you choose or not. But if you do choose to share it, you'll be welcomed with open arms. The open arms of other pilgrims and the open arms of St. James. My quote this week is from the Jewish philosopher Martin Buber. I borrowed it, and I'll explain from whom a little later. But Martin Buber wrote, "All journeys have secret destinations of which the traveller is unaware." All journeys have secret destinations of which the traveller is unaware. My guests this week are on the line from Massachusetts in the United States. Douglas and Laurie Challenger came to my attention via a new Camino film. I watched the movie just yesterday, and it's brilliant. Douglas and Laurie are on the line. Welcome, pilgrims.
Thank you. Thank you for having us, Dan.
Thank you, Dan. Good to be with you.
Douglas, I'll begin with you. You're a professor of sociology and documentary studies at Franklin Pierce University in New Hampshire, just across the state border from where you live. Given your academic rigor, how do you describe the Camino to people who ask about it?
Well, that it's an ancient pilgrimage that began, you know, over 1,000 years ago, and that today it's walked by 250,000 people every year. It's kind of gone through a renaissance in recent decades, and people walk it for all kinds of reasons, not just religious reasons. It's, an opportunity to take some time out away from your life and do some reflection on it, or to, you know, have an adventure, be in Europe and enjoy other cultures, meet people from all over the world, and just have a great time and an opportunity to meet people who are what I find when I'm on the Camino is that people are, almost everybody has got a story of some sort, a reason they're out there walking, and people are open and willing to talk about that with you, which I find is unusual in ordinary life. And so if people are interested in that kind of thing, then, you know, I think that's what the Camino has to offer. And the meeting of other people, I will always find is kind of one of the joys of walking the Camino and connecting with people from all walks of life.
Yeah, it certainly is. Laurie, you might tell us how the Camino came into your lives. Do you remember?
Oh, yes, I do. Well, I learned about the Camino through Doug, and he could talk more about that. But he, when I met Doug in 2005, he was planning to go on a long distance walk with a group of students, but not on the Camino. I don't think he knew about the Camino quite yet. After a couple of years of him taking students over to Europe to walk, there was a whole other program through the college at that point, which he can tell you about. There's a whole history of long distance walking from Franklin Pierce University. And he learned about the Camino on one of those walks and then told me about it. And he walked it by himself before we walked it together in 2007. So that's how I found out about it.
Right.
And you connected with it because...
I did. I connected with it because when I was 19 years old, which is the age of a lot of the students we take, I put a backpack on with a friend of mine. And it was the first time I was ever on an airplane or had traveled anywhere. And we went and wandered through Europe ourselves, as did a lot of young Americans and people from all... I actually met a lot of Australians on that trip, and just wandered around Europe and fell in love with that, just wandering at that time. And I was there for a couple of months. So we instantly connected on that.
It's interesting, Doug and Laurie, my sons are 19 and 17. I was only just saying this week, this is one of the great shames of the pandemic is that it's robbed a couple of years off those children's lives to be able to do that.
Yes.
That rite of passage that we all had.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really sad. Hey, Doug, I read a piece you wrote on the American Pilgrims on the Camino website that you first walked in 2007. And you got to see the good, the bad, and the ugly about yourself. Did you feel at that time you needed to change? Did you get a sense that you needed something?
Yeah. I mean, I think back then, when I look back at it now, I was in a lot of inner turmoil myself. I had just turned 50 recently, and I was struggling. I had been divorced twice in my life. I had no kids of my own. That was something that bothered me as I was getting older. I was thinking I might not ever have children, and that was something I always wanted. As Laurie said, we had met in 2005, but then we really didn't start a relationship until a couple months before I was planning this trip to go on the Camino. And, I connected with Laurie right away, but I knew if we stayed together, I probably, cause she's the same age as I am, she already had four daughters of her own, plenty of kids, that I would probably never have my own biological children, So I went off on the Camino by myself in 2007 with that kind of to mull over. And, I think I was working through a lot of that. And I remember walking, as a lot of people do on the Camino, you connect with a group of people and you walk with them and they become kind of your Camino family. And there was a guy from Germany that was in that group I was with. And I remember talking to him about this dilemma and told him about Laurie. And he said, sounds like she's perfect for you, Doug, and I knew when he said it, he was right. And I think, the rest of that trip and the aftermath of it was really a part of a process of, for me, of accepting that I kind of missed the boat of having my own kids, and also coming around to a place of gratitude for Laurie and my relationship with her and her four daughters, who have been wonderful and have welcomed me into their lives with open arms. And I think, you know, the Camino, that first Camino was a big part of that kind of turnaround for me. You know, it's part of that process of acceptance.
Yeah. Wow.
And then a few years later, you know, as our relationship grew, when we started taking students on the Camino on our second trip in 2013, I took a ring with me and I asked Laurie to marry me. We got engaged in León on that trip.
And, wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, so then you've created this semester-long walk study abroad program focused on the Camino that you've led alongside Laurie on a number of occasions. Laurie, you might tell me, what's it like to be part of that journey?
Oh, it's a highlight of my life, I can tell you that. It's something that I just treasure every time I am lucky enough to go along with Doug and these students and help him lead these trips. I love watching the students, how they change over the course of the trip, and they just grow in so many ways. And I grow every time I go. I learn something new about myself or have time to reflect on something. And I have fallen in love with the Camino and hope to get back again one day.
We're going to talk about the movie that you both have made about this journey, the perpetual journey, as it's called. But you might just try to tell me, perhaps I'll stay with you, Laurie, what's it like for those young people? What do they tell you about that journey, that Camino journey?
Mm-hmm. They talk to us in meetings. They don't share a lot. I find they don't share a lot at the beginning of the trip about how they're feeling. At the beginning, I feel like they resist a little bit. For instance, we do different things with them when we first start out. We have them walk in silence for a day. And I remember on one trip specifically, it was all females on that trip. And they didn't know, there was a lot of eye rolling. They were not happy that we didn't let them talk for 2 hours. And they, by the end of the trip, or it was actually, we were in the middle of the trip, we had some faculty come over and visit the group, and they walked with the students themselves without us for a day. And the students had these new faculty members that had just shown up on the Camino walk in silence. They did the same thing to them that we had done to the students earlier on, and they told them how much they loved walking in silence. They had learned to do that and how much they appreciated that quiet. Where, you know, there's always one of the things that happens is we talk to them about unplugging and not having their earbuds in all the time. And so there are things like that happened. I can't, can you specifically remember certain things about them saying to us how they feel? I mean, it's more towards the end that they talk about their reflections of how they've changed, how they've grown, how they feel at peace, how they feel like they can handle things differently that causes stress in their life. And I think it's because they've had the time to just walk and think, and they're not in the rat race of life as we know it in the real world.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the joys, isn't it, of the Camino is getting away from all of that. Douglas, how does it work? They don't spend an entire semester on the Camino.
They do. I modeled the program a little bit after this older program that we had at our school, the Walk in Europe program. It's a semester long. They get a semester's worth of credit, and we start in San Sebastian, Spain, where they attend a language school and study Spanish intensively for a couple of weeks. And while we're there, I teach an interdisciplinary seminar on the Camino that talks about the history and the culture a little bit, and also the anthropology, sociology of pilgrimage. Oh. And they read some books over the summer before we go. We usually go over in August and come back at the beginning of November. So we're there for about 10 weeks. And so the first 2 weeks is in San Sebastian. We do practice walking there. We meet with them a lot. We're trying to, tell them what the Camino etiquette is like, and what it's like living in the albergues and so forth. And then we take, we go to France actually and spend a couple of weeks on the Le Puy route in one of the feeder routes to the Camino Francis. We start either in a town called Cahors or Moissac, and we walk for a couple of weeks in France, and then we get to Saint-Jean, and then we're on foot there all the way till we get to Santiago. And we have meetings along the way, like kind of weekly meetings, and we see them all the time too. And we walk with them a lot at the beginning, because we're kind of trying to show them the ropes a little bit. And they're, they like being all together at first, but about a third of the way in, we start letting them go and in small groups, and they book their own places to stay, or they decide where they're going to stay for the evening. We tell them we'll meet them, in 2 or 3 days in a certain town, and we regroup together as a whole and, have a meeting, and then send them off again for maybe a few more days. And,
yeah.
And that way they kind of become more and more independent of us. And we finish in Santiago. We tend to go out. We go out to Finisterre either for a day or two or just a day trip. And we have a little ritual that we do out there that kind of marks the end of the journey. And that's how it works. Then they get credit for walking the Camino, keeping a journal, and then writing a long paper about it when they get home, about how it all impacted them.
And then part of that, as I understand it, is they then deliver a kind of a presentation at the university. Yeah.
So it must have,
now you've done it a few times, that must be quite the phenomenon at Franklin Pierce University.
It is. It's kind of become kind of a signature, unique program at our school.
Yeah, I bet.
The school's very proud of it. And a lot of students, it catches their eye when they're thinking about coming to the school and, make the decision to come there, in part because that program exists.
I imagine it's most probably like I am with other pilgrims. I can kind of see it in their eyes. I know, and we kind of have this knowing glance, and I imagine there's past students who put their arm around other students and say, "You're going to love this. This is going to be a really wonderful thing to do." Laurie, I imagine that's something you've observed as well. It's not really an outsider, but perhaps not necessarily part of the course, but somebody involved with it.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. They're very proud when they come back. And we have asked some students to help us recruit for future trips. And they love to share their stories with mm-hmm. students that are considering going.
Yeah. And Laurie, I'll stay with you because I know what it's like to be on the Camino. It's tough. Mm-hmm. It must be difficult then for you and Douglas to not only manage that yourselves, because you're not driving, you're walking.
Right.
And then you are managing those human beings, those personalities as well. So it's an additional difficulty, if you like.
Yeah.
That's not easy.
Definitely. No, it's not easy. And the thing for us is that, I mean, we do talk about that a lot, that when we're there, that we are walking it, we're doing it physically, emotionally, everything that all pilgrims go through. And then when we're at the end of our day walking and we're showered and waiting for dinner, we're talking about, we're processing what's happening with the students. We're not really resting. We have our other job, you know, that we're taking care of them. Yeah. And sometimes we have students that are sick or injured, and then we have to get them to the doctor or get them medication. There's always something that's happening on top of managing the budget that we have to do, the bookkeeping as well. So we never really get a break.
Yeah.
And it is exhausting, but still, I love it. And there's nothing I'd rather do than take a group of students on the Camino, because it's so rewarding.
And physically, like we train a lot for it because we're older than them, you know, and so because we know when we get to the end of the day, our day isn't over, and we have to be a lot of pilgrims, you know, just like to pass out at the end of the day, but that's kind of not an option for us. And so we always feel like, at least I do, I always feel like I need to be in better shape than these 20-year-olds because we have so much to do with them.
I imagine that's right. Yeah, of course. You not only have to be in better shape physically, perhaps even emotionally.
But
let me ask you a personal question. Does that put difficulty on the relationship between Douglas and Laurie?
No, you know, it's funny. The first trip, we had different approaches. Doug was really more wanting to be friends with the students. And I, as a parent of four children, felt more comfortable setting limits, and he didn't have that experience because he didn't have his own children.
Right.
And you're living with them. You basically are their parents while you're there. And they are older. They're all 18, 19 years old, roughly, give or take. Mm-hmm. And it's a huge responsibility. And I'm comfortable because I, as a parent, learned that setting limits is I think kind of what they want and need in a way, and so we balanced each other, but we worked a lot out on that first trip in terms of how we could do this together. And I can't say we ever fought about it, but we've had disagreements, but our relationship is such that we are able to work through it, and now we have it down, and we it's pretty seamless. So I think Doug and I are both at our best when we're on the Camino.
I can't wait to talk about the movie, because as I said in the introduction, I watched it last night and I absolutely loved it. But I just want to ask a couple of other questions, if I may. Douglas, what does a successful journey look like for these young people?
What I'm looking for is for them, you know, is for them to embrace what it means to be a pilgrim. And they don't do it at first. I think they go over thinking they're sort of going to have a fun time in Europe, and they kind of bring that college culture with them. And I think it takes a while for them. And of course, they're walking. They're not used to walking that much. And, you know, they're getting used to that, and they're chafing a little bit at the, you know, the curfew of 10 o'clock. Yeah. Lights are out in these albergues, and, you know, and so they go through this a period of sort of rebelling against it, about what the Camino is, its rituals, its routines, and so forth. And then then eventually they just sort of surrender to it. They know they've got a long way to go. And then the magic starts to happen, I think, when they accept that and let themselves be kind of enveloped in this it's sort of a sacred atmosphere, I think, that all these rituals create and the space it gives people to, you know, to just sort of, you know, find a connection to themselves and to each other. And it's, it becomes a crucible for growth and change. And then you start to hear them talking differently about it. They're, as you may have noticed, the one of the guys in the movie is talking about how miserable he is through half the trip, and somewhere out in the middle of the Meseta, he starts to change the way he's talking about it.
Yeah.
We gave them in the film little flip cameras to have with them to like do little video diaries when they were alone. And in his video diary that we put in the film there, he talks about how it's starting to sneak up on him and how, yeah, you know, he, in a weird way, it's satisfying, even though he's kind of miserable.
Yeah.
And by the end, he's like, he's been transformed by it.
Yeah.
So to me, a successful, when I see that happen in some of the students, I think it's been a success.
You know, his whole face changes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
His whole appearance changes throughout the course of the film. It's amazing to watch. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But I can't wait to talk about the film, but I have to ask the question. Have you ever had a student who packs their bag and goes home?
We did. On our first trip, we had one boy who had trouble. I think we couldn't figure out he had some kind of medical issue. In the first week we were there, he kept sort of fainting and passing out a little bit, you know, and we didn't really know what was going on. We took him to the hospital 3 or 4 times. And eventually, I guess the doctors just said he's having panic attacks. We couldn't continue to, you know, manage that, you know, and it was kind of harming the rest of the trip. So he had to go home. And then there was another guy who was having like relationship issues back home with a girlfriend. And I think he was missing her, and he wanted to go back home to be with her. And he hadn't. Yeah. So early on in that first trip, we had 2 students leave, but it's not after that. And we've run 4 trips so far. So,
they're pretty good odds.
They're usually ready to come home. You know, at the end, they miss being home, and it's bittersweet. You know, they're ready to come home, but they also they have fallen in love with the walking and with being in Europe, traveling, you know, too.
And many of them have said they want to go back again one day.
At some point in their life.
Yeah. Well, the film is called Perpetual Journey, A Semester on the Road to Santiago. It's going to be launched in a couple of weeks' time in New Hampshire. COVID-19 actually played a hand in finishing the film. Laurie, you might tell us about that. The logistics of it and how it all came together, the journey of the film, as it were.
Yes, exactly. Well, when we got home from that trip, we had all this footage to go through, and we did go through it quickly. And I think Doug was a little more anxious than I was to get it finished because he wanted it available for when the students presented in the spring at their academic showcase. And so we put a version together, and I was never fully happy with that version. And we went back and forth on that and just never really had the time to go back and look at all the footage again, because I knew when we shot it, there were certain things, shot the film over there as we were walking often with Doug carrying the camera on a selfie stick. And I knew there were things in there that I wanted to say in the film that weren't in the original version. And so during COVID, we had the time because we had to stay home, and we went through every single clip. There are thousands of clips, and redid the entire film. It's a whole different film now. And we were able to capture all those things that I had in my mind that I really wanted to say. And I, so I think it made it a better film, actually, a richer
yeah.
film.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, we were working on getting the music rights for the film too, and that took time.
Yeah.
But I think the big difference between the first version, which I was keen to finish a version of it because it was my sabbatical project, actually, that semester. And the first version focused mostly on the students. And in this second version, we bring ourselves into the story more. So now I think the film is richer because of that, because it shows young people doing this thing and people, you know, older in life, you know, in their, I think we were 60 when we shot that.
Right. So we have COVID to thank for the time to sit and go through all of that. It took us many hours.
Many months.
Yeah.
It's come together beautifully. I really enjoyed it. I really did. I mentioned to you before we began the interview that there are scenes in it where there are just streetscapes or sort of landscape vistas, and you've left the audio in where you can hear the Camino. I really loved that, because that's a part of what I love the most about the Camino is the opportunity to have the time just to take in what's around you. It's such a blessing, isn't it?
Yes, just the sound of gravel under your feet.
Yeah. And I won't give away too much because I want people to watch it and enjoy it as much as I did. But there's just a couple of scenes that I'd like to bring up with you. In the very beginning, you get to Orison and there's no room at the inn. And you're sent backwards,
right?
And the students are sort of saying bits and pieces. And again, I won't give away too much. But then there's a little clip of you, Doug, and you say, "I'm not happy about it either." And it's then that I think to myself, "Oh yeah, they're on the Camino too."
Oh, nice.
You know, like.
Yeah, we've got our feelings too about it.
Exactly. Yeah. So how mindful are you in taking these students on this journey? How mindful are you of guarding or not guarding them or trying to trying to hide those
modeling.
Hide those frustrations from them? Because you if they're that's very early on in the journey. You know, if they're saying, "Well, Doug's frustrated, so I'm going to get frustrated," or are you, and Laurie, you might answer this. Are you kind of hiding your emotions to enable them to experience their full range of emotions?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. And, you know, probably the mom in me kicks in and I try to be the strong one for them. I think I do take that role on quite a bit. I don't think they see us. They don't. Yeah. I don't think they even think the students really think about our personal struggles.
Right.
And,
And
that's okay because it really is about them. We are running a trip for them.
I mean, they'll even say things like, "Oh, we met some people, and here we are, like in our late 50s, early 60s. And they'll say, "We met some people today. There were some old folks we walked with for a little while. They were in their 40s or something." And I'm thinking, what do they think of us? You know, like
do they even know how old we are?
That's great, isn't it? That's really great.
But yeah, we're trying to lead them. I would think we're trying to model a little bit.
But in that scene,
I mean, I think I'm just trying to like connect with them too, you know, like, yeah, it was kind of a miserable day. And I was disappointed that we thought we had a reservation at the main inn there. And so I was just trying to, you know, connect with them really.
You were lightening the mood.
Trying to lighten the mood.
Hey, Laurie, tell us about carrying one's fears in your backpack.
Yes. Well, every time I go, I try to take less on the Camino with me, but I'm not very successful. And a lot of that for me, I tend to be an anxious person. I worry a lot about things. And so I tend to put in an extra shirt or an extra this or that, or this special kind of like cream I like on my face. I always make sure I have an extra one, you know, just little things that it adds up. And that is all about fear that I'm not going to have what I need for my own comfort on the Camino. And as much as I try to let it go every time, when I start out, I'm always a little heavier than I should be. And it totally is about fear for me. So I do end up mailing things home eventually, or just giving things away or leaving things. But those are the kind of fears that I carry in my backpack.
Yeah. There's a great song that plays during the course of the film. It's Walk On, Walk On, Walk On.
Yeah.
And it's so lovely. But it's, I think one of the lines in the song is, it's only the steps you take. I think that's the line. It's only the steps you take alone that matter.
Right. Mm-hmm. That matter.
Mm-hmm. Right. Isn't that a powerful line?
It is. It's a powerful song.
Yeah.
I discovered that song on a trip, on our 2013 trip, and I played it for the students in an albergue one night, and they fell in love with that song. So it's always meant a lot. It's by the Weepies. Mm-hmm.
When you're watching it, and I mentioned before about the oral landscape and the silence, which is quite often so gorgeous, or those silent moments when there's nobody talking, there's no dialogue, and you can really immerse yourself in the journey itself. I thought, I just loved it. And then there's a scene when, Laurie, you are walking along and you're talking to the camera and you're saying, I had a decision to make this morning and this is the reason I made that decision. And then you say, oh, look at the peppers.
Yes.
And there's this realization in real time, this is not scripted film, and where you say, oh. And you can see the delight in your face. And then a couple of minutes later, you turn back to the camera and you say, that's what the Camino is about, taking the time and having the time to discover little fields of peppers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
So beautiful.
Yes, so true.
Yeah.
So true. That was a magical moment and totally unplanned. And things like that happen often on the Camino, I find. I'm sure you did too, where little things catch you by surprise, and
you're in a place where you can see them.
In
a way,
you're not rushing quickly get the dog walked or do whatever we do at home, rushing from one thing to another. And
that is so true. Yeah, that is so true.
Mm-hmm.
Laurie, I read Douglas's article on the American Pilgrims on the Camino website. It's a few years ago now. It's almost 10 years old. It said, among those lessons I hear my students describe are learning to be comfortable with solitude and having less stuff, getting clear about what and who is really important in their lives, taking themselves and their goals more seriously, falling in love with the world and its diverse people, experiencing the joys of a more simple and mindful life, feeling a sense of physical strength and accomplishment that can be transferred to other endeavors, and trusting that humanity is basically good. Now, that's almost 10 years ago that Doug wrote that. You could very well have been the elevator pitch for this film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow.
True.
I wrote that, huh?
Yes, you did.
It's beautifully written all true, well said.
It's time for me to come clean. I borrowed this week's quote. I always have a quote in my podcasts, and I borrowed it this week from that same article, the Jewish philosopher Martin Buber, who wrote, all journeys have secret destinations of which the traveler is unaware. So, yeah. Laurie, you might just take us back to your home in Massachusetts. How does the Camino feature in your lives back home, the day-to-day pilgrimage of life?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, one thing that has happened in our own home and in my own life, my personal stuff that I collect is that I've been able to purge a lot of things, and I don't want a lot of clutter in my life, physical things. I like things to be sparse. I like to have less. I've always been a walker. I always go out every day and walk, rain or shine, pretty much, winter, summer, for miles every day. We have a lab, chocolate lab, who loves to go out and walk with us. So that hasn't changed, except, you know, I don't get to walk like I do on the Camino, but my whole life I've walked. But I think it's more also when I come across things that I'm challenged with, I don't think I let things get to me as much. I feel like it's given me some patience, because I'm somebody, I like things ordered. It's kind of how I am, how I function in the world. And when you're on the Camino, you don't have control over where you're going to sleep, or the shower situation, or the bathroom situation.
Yeah.
There are so many things, or your food even, that you're going to be served, and you have to just let it go. And everything always works out. And I think that's something, one of the biggest lessons for me that I carry at home, is that I don't have to be in charge of everything, and that I can let go, and it's all going to be okay. And I'm actually going to enjoy it better, maybe. So I love that that it's helped me, I think,
yeah,
with some of those issues that I have in my own life personally. Yeah. To just take things in stride. Yeah.
Yeah. Doug, you do this stuff for a living. What have you and Laurie learned about yourselves in the course of making the documentary and taking students away on this journey of their, for some of them, a journey of a lifetime? What have you learned about yourselves?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think we've learned how much we like doing this thing together, and how meaningful it is to have that extra. I mean, it's fun to go and do it yourself or as a couple. We did go back one year and walked by ourselves, we missed the students a little bit, you know.
Wow.
There's a kind of, it's very fulfilling. And as a teacher, you know, it doesn't get any better in a way than seeing the kinds of growth and development that we see in the students on this trip. But I think, yeah, I mean, the Camino is a big part of our lives. We talk about it almost every day. Mm-hmm. You know, our memories of it. We quote the students to each other because they've said memorable things to us over the years, and we talk about them. We're in touch with many of them still on Facebook, and it's just become a very big part of our lives, and we're lucky that we've been able to do it together.
Yeah, that is one of the things that, you know, I could have said earlier too, is that it's the learning to be in the moment and in your life. And one of the things I talk about in the film at one point is about not waiting to do things in your life and doing things now. Don't put them off till later if you can, like these big things, because you don't know what the future holds. Mm-hmm. And like with COVID, we have not been able to go over to Spain now for a couple of years. And I'm just so grateful we had all those trips beforehand, and we are getting older, and who knows what might happen in the future. But live your life now. Live your life now, mm-hmm. and don't postpone the things that you really want to do.
Yeah, I really loved the film. I think it was a really lovely story about some really lovely people, and seeing mm-hmm. the Camino woven through it was just an added mm-hmm. bonus for me. And the narrative mm-hmm. that emerged for me was summed up perfectly, because I had written this script before I watched the film. And I based the script on that article that you wrote for the American Pilgrims on the Camino, Doug. And And then, and here I am now looking at the script, having watched the film last night, and here is this Martin Buber quote again: "All journeys have secret destinations of which the traveler is unaware." And I can't help thinking it's almost like you wrote that years ago.
Yeah,
I've written it before speaking to you, and it's just the perfect way to sum up a film that I thought was just a beautifully told story about transformation.
Yeah. And that was what we wanted to do with the film. We wanted to, you know, we talk about it all the time and write about it, but we wanted to actually show it. And
yeah,
we tried to make a film that where you could actually see that happening.
Yeah.
And I hope we did.
And again, I'm going to go back to that article that you wrote years ago, perhaps not knowing that you were going to make this film. You wrote this: "The students described secret destinations the Camino brought them to, and sometimes, in my own case, it was a painful place of recognizing a shortcoming or a personal habit that's not serving them well, and finding themselves within themselves the desire to create new and better ways to navigate life. By the end of their journey on the Camino, they all realized that those new places within themselves to which the Camino led them have become an enduring part of the landscape of their lives going forward." Pretty good, huh?
Yeah. Send me that piece. I lost track of that.
And like I say, I'm reading the script that I wrote, I don't know, a week ago. And I'm reading that now thinking, wow, that's the perfect again. There's your 90-second elevator pitch. It's just, it's wonderful. And the movie is a wonderful gift that you both are giving to the world and the Camino community. And I'm so excited for you. And I wish you all the very, very best. I'd love to imagine that our paths cross one day, perhaps on El Camino de Santiago, the sacred way. But in the meantime, congratulations. And thank you for taking the time to talk to me. Douglas and Laurie Challenger, buen camino.
Buen camino, Dan. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Our pleasure.
My guests this week, on the line from Massachusetts in the United States, Douglas and Laurie Challenger. Douglas is professor of sociology at Franklin Pierce University. The movie is Perpetual Journey, and you can find all the details for the film on Facebook and how you can book it via Vimeo by searching Perpetual Journey. And it's premiering at the Monadnock International Film Festival from October 21st to October 30 and promises to be the most wonderful event. You can learn how to book the picture, as I said, to screen it at your event or your local pilgrimage community or your church community or your family and friends. Best to go to the Facebook page. That's the best way to find it, Perpetual Journey. That's all we have time for this week. The minutes tick by like steps on the Meseta. Remember the quote Douglas and Laurie used from the Jewish philosopher Martin Buber. I borrowed from them to help tell their story. All journeys have secret destinations of which the traveller is unaware. Until next week, I'm Dan Mullins. Buen camino.
Somewhere along the way, somewhere along the way,